There are three Greek words that can be translated as with. The first one is soon, the second is meta, and the third is pros. And just very briefly, the word soon, it means it has a sense of togetherness, of people being together. The Greek word synagogue comes from this, right? It's a place where people gather together. The second word is meta. And meta has the idea, the sense of coming alongside somebody. For example, if you are going for a walk and you have somebody walking along beside you, you are with them. You are meta them. Right? That's what the word meta means, a sense of coming alongside somebody. The third word, though, that can be translated as with is the word pros. And pros has the meaning of having an intimate, face-to-face relationship with another person. In fact, the Greek word for face is prosopon, rooted in that term pros. And pros is the term that John uses here in John chapter 1, verse 1. This logos, right? This embodied wisdom and knowledge has a very intimate, very close, face-to-face relationship with God. Indeed, this relationship is so close, it is so intimate, it is so tightly knit together that this logos and God are actually one. Remember, John is a Jewish Christian. He's been raised within Judaism. You just can't shake that away from your person. And for Jewish people, as we read throughout the Old Testament, one of the greatest fears that they have in their lives is that God will turn his face away from them. Remember the Aaronic blessing from Numbers? May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. That face-to-face relationship that they desired was found already pre-existingly between the Logos, the Word, and God. And the Logos is Jesus. And when Jesus is hanging on the cross, if you'll remember it reading in the Gospels, fully assuming the sin of broken humanity, that pros relationship with God, that face-to-face, intimate, tight relationship that John is referring to here in John 1:1 is broken in some manner. Because sin, which Jesus has become physically in going to the cross, cannot be in the presence of God. And remember that when Jesus experiences this separateness from the Father, when that pros relationship is broken, darkness falls upon the entire land. There are earthquakes, and a 30-foot tall curtain in the temple in Jerusalem tears from top to bottom. The prologue goes on to explain the role of the Logos in creation, and we're not going to spend time on that this morning, because this week in our reading from the story, we're going to be reading about the creation account in the first few chapters of Genesis. But then at verse 14, we read something remarkable. At John 1:14, we read that the Word, the Logos, became flesh and made his dwelling among us. The ancient, right, ideal of reason, discourse, and wisdom took on the word sarx, that means flesh. He didn't take on a body, a soma. He did not appear to be a human being, an anthropon, or just appear to carry on some type of human image. See, the Greeks were big on this disembodiment between reality and human form. Rather, divine wisdom embodied in the Word, in the person of Jesus, became a fully human being, flesh and blood, corporal person with capillaries, with organs, with nerves, became sarx. It's a disgusting word in the Greek language. Fleshy, bloody person. and he entered into our human existence, and he made his, at verse 14 we read, his eskenazon, his tent among us. That is the embodiment of wisdom, the Logos, the Lord Jesus Christ himself, who is God, came to earth, and he pitched his tent, his tabernacle, among us. God lived among his people as one of them. This is rich, rich, beautiful stuff. In verse 16, and out of his, the Logos, the Word, out of his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. So in these 18 verses, we didn't dig into the creation account, because again, we're going to do that this week. But these verses encompass the entirety of the story, the saga of salvation, the story of God's amazing love for his children, from creation to fall to redemption to consummation. God works in and through his Son, the divine Word, the Logos, embodiment of wisdom, to bring about reconciliation and healing between the Creator and his creation. It is through Jesus that God reveals his plan for the entire cosmos. And it is only through understanding Jesus as the Word, fully human and fully God, eternally existent, not created, that we can begin to fully grasp the depth of the love that God has for his created order, let's say the entire cosmos in general, but in each and every single human being in particular. God is already at work bringing his plan for his creation to fruition. And the amazing thing is that God has invited us to participate in that plan. Many people have a very small view of God. They want to invite God into their lives. Right? And what I mean by that is people have a plan for what they want their life to be. They're going to do this, and then they're going to do that. And then this is going to happen, and then that is going to happen. And they want God to come in to their autobiography and for God to bless the things that they want to do. That is, they want the Creator of the universe to come in and be a co-star in their story. Do you remember years ago, I used to see t-shirts and people wore these buttons, God is my co-pilot? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. God is not your co-pilot. The Lord of all creation, who spoke it into existence ex nihilo, out of nothing? God is the one who has written the greatest story ever written. And he invites us, those made in his image in the Imago Dei, into his story, because his vision for us is infinitely greater than we could ever have on our own. His love for us is infinitely greater than any love that we could ever conjure on our own. And the depths and the conviction of God's love is proved to us by becoming a human being himself and enduring all of the hurt and pain that comes with being a human being, assuming the mantle of all sin for all time in his body on the cross, dying on the cross, and then rising on the third day. It's the greatest love story ever written. And we've been invited to be a part of it. A part of the story that God has written is feeding us. God desires to nurture us in His Word, to be close to us in prayer, but also to fill us in and through His sacraments, which He's given to us. And this morning, we are going to be coming to the table of the Lord, where we will eat a little piece of bread and drink from a little dram of juice. And for many of us, this is just kind of a rote thing that we do the first Sunday of each month and on special occasions throughout the church year. It really doesn't mean anything. It's just this ancient practice that we participate in. But I would simply offer to you this morning to expand your understanding of what's happening at the table. Our tradition has lifted up that Jesus is present in the bread. He is present in the cup, spiritually present, nourishing us, filling us with His grace, with His mercy, and with His love. And He desires that we come regularly and participate in this very special meal which He's planned for us. It may not seem like much, but it's a foretaste, it's representative of the great banquet which is to come when He returns at some point in the future in all of His glory to make all things new.